You're listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. Tonight, we discuss Billy Wilder's Double Indemnity.
You no trouble. Me, fifth element. Supreme being.
You will be a weapon. You will be a minister of death, praying for war. But until that day, you are cute. Sound off like you got a pair.
Yes, I was wondering what would break first. Your spirit or your money?
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
God is dead.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament,
yes.
Mr. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Dead
fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes, the dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs in cats living together, mass hysteria.
Welcome to the podcast, Movie Crew Podcast, Movie Makers Talking Movies. We're your host. I'm editor Brian Elkins. With me here tonight, director of photography, Mike Griggs.
Well, we're not in Medford now. We're in a hurry.
We're in a hurry. Straight up the line.
Straight up the line is straight up. I don't know.
Fucking 40s direction. What are you going to do? We also have with us costume designer Kristen Jones.
Hello.
Hey, and here we are talking this 1944 film noir classic, Double Indemnity. Guys, I was watching this classic. I don't know about you guys, but I was a little bored watching this one.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Interesting.
Like the whole time or at certain parts?
Kind of the whole time.
Fascinating. I was hooked in the beginning. But I started watching it like super late, and so I had to split it over 2 days, and so I stopped it almost halfway through. And when I came back to it, I was like, "Oh my god, this is so slow! Like, was it this slow last night? Like, did I just like kill all of the momentum by splitting it in half? Like, what the fuck, man?"
Yeah, I feel like it gets kind of slow for me when he's discussing all the insurance theories and theories with his boss.
Yeah.
I really don't. And it's a shame because I feel like the actor who plays the boss and like the dialogue there is good and it's interesting. But it's not also not interesting. So like as a scene, it would be fine. Like a cut scene. You could enjoy it and be like, I wonder why did they cut this? You know,
I don't know if cutting anything out would actually help. Is this movie just been so ripped off?
Yeah. Oh, I noticed that too.
Right. Like you just know where there's no surprises. Like you just know it's so telegraphed because we've seen all these movies before. Is that what the
problem
is? Which
parts did you find were telegraphed, Brian?
Like every fucking goddamn thing. Like everything.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I hadn't seen this in a while. It's been at least 10 or 15 years. And like I forgot like some of the images and stuff, but. Oh my gosh, there was no surprises in the plot or the performances. These felt like I'd already seen these performances before too.
Yeah, I don't recall this exactly now, but there was even a point when I was watching this where I was like, I know I haven't seen this before, but I've definitely seen this right here, like this scene, this line, all of this. And so it actually became a game of trying to figure out like where have I seen this before, if not this movie.
That's fascinating.
I kept thinking about Basic Instinct the entire time. You know, I think it was a lot of Barbara Stanwyck, but like I just every time I was like, yeah, this is like so watered down. This is so tame by today's standards. It's droll.
Well, like even their whole relationship, I spent the entire time being like, neither of them actually give a shit about that. What are we supposed to care about them being in love? Like, he calls her baby instead of a, he doesn't use her name like ever. He's always calling her baby from like day one.
Yeah, I don't think we're supposed to care about them at all. I didn't, as a couple anyway. And I kind of wonder if that's the point, because he just wanted to have a fling and she wanted to use him for murder. And I think that is sort of the intrigue. If you go in thinking it's about love, yeah, it's not. It's not going to be a fun time, I think.
Well, I thought it was going to be more about like sex and lust and stuff. And there's like one scene where there's maybe the implication that they actually spent the night together. But I mean, it is the 40s and they're not super like on the nose with that shit. But
wasn't the Hays Code in effect during this or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. So they can't. But I thought, considering the Hays Code was in effect, there was a fair amount of sexual implications, especially with her showing up in the towel. I was like, are you allowed to do that? Hold on.
Okay, that was also my first thought. I was like, she is like the implication of naked under there.
Well, especially because he focuses so much on her anklet, which is like the only thing she's wearing.
Yes. Which is apparently supposed to represent an availability of a married woman. Like either she's supposed to be saying, hey, I'm available. You can, you know, like secretly do it. Or it's just an indication. It's like the upside down pineapple kind of thing now.
Oh, that's interesting. I did not know any of that. I didn't look it up. But anklets, weren't they originally, I don't know if you know, weren't anklets originally like jewelry, like in harems, and they did signify that they were taken?
Maybe. I think it's supposed to be a particular, I spent like 3 seconds looking it up, but it's supposed to be a particular ankle, like if it's on the right ankle or whatever. I don't know which one it was, but it's, it's like a secret code of not quite like swinging like pineapple thing, but like a, hey, if you wanna, hello. Apparently, according to my 3 second Google search, maybe it's right or wrong. I don't know.
I got the anklet on this leg. You know what that means?
Yeah, that's. He was like really like that anklet though.
Yeah, the anklet and the fucking hat. Those constantly kept being brought up, which I didn't understand all that the hat stuff. But I don't know. I guess hats were big in the '40s.
Yeah, they were.
Wait, which hat?
Fred McMurray's hat. Like he's. Like, I don't know, when is it the first time he goes over or the second time he goes over to her house? And then, like, he leaves the hat there.
When she comes back to his place and she says, you left your hat?
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't leave the hat. That was just an excuse to go to his house.
Yeah. But then there's also...
Yeah, he didn't leave your hat, honestly. Yeah.
I rewound it and watched it. He picks it up on the way out of the fucking place. Like, that was clearly supposed to be, like, obviously, hello.
And then the Barbara Stanwyck's husband, the husband they knock off and kill, he makes a bunch of mentions of hats. Like, you know, like Barbara Stanwyck's character is always running out buying 3 hats at a time.
Oh, I thought that was just supposed to be like, yeah, she spends money like she's, you know, it's going out of style and it bothers me kind of like it's like a usual jab.
It's expensive. Yeah.
Just a lot of hat talk.
And unnecessary. Well, but people did used to wear way more hats than they do now, which I think is none.
Unless it's a baseball cap.
Which is a cap and not a hat, technically. So.
Ooh. There we go.
I love pedantic nomenclature.
Now everybody's Googling, what's the difference between a cat and a hat? I need to know.
Is it the brim? The brim needs to go all the way around for it to be a hat?
Yes.
Dope.
Then, you know, but I mean, if we're going to get technical about it, people used to cover their heads, which we have talked about on the podcast before. And also people used to wear way more accessories and people used to care way more about how they looked. The idea of showing up in basically leisure wear or your essentially slightly better versions of pajamas didn't really happen until I think the 90s. This is a very recent development. And so, yeah, you would spend a lot of money on clothes, especially because you did have ready-to-wear clothing. Like, you could go in and buy it off the rack. But, you know, if you had money and you cared about your appearance, you would have most of your clothes custom-made also.
I love the comment that they give to Keys, the insurance guy, like, where he's like, oh, you decided to dress down or whatever. He's like, he's in like a 3-piece suit. He just doesn't have the fucking jacket on. And they're like ribbing him for not having his jacket on. Like he's like,
yes,
I still got a tie, motherfucker. Like, Jesus.
As they should. He is dressed down. Yes.
Yeah. It was a great moment. Like, that man is fancier than most people that I know these days. Like,
but that's not saying much, because most people that you know don't dress well. And I don't mean that as a knock against you or the people you know. I mean that against a knock against the entire world currently. The
society is dressing down as a whole, yes.
And so as we're on costumes, Edith Head did the costumes, which...
Oh, shit, really?
Yes.
Nice. Okay.
For anyone who is listening and doesn't know, she did all of Hitchcock's costumes. She's a brilliant costume designer. I forget how many awards she's won. But everyone knows her, and I'm going to mention this again, because that is who Edna is based off of on The Incredibles.
Edna Mose.
Yes.
Fucking love it.
All right, so what was your favorite outfit? What was the one?
The towel. Well,
the towel and the anklet. I mean, come on. How can you get more?
What? Over the...
No, I was going to say... This is my pick, Brian, if we're voting.
No, I thought... So, okay. So, probably there were some really nice blouses. It was hard to pick just one, especially because as I was admiring the costumes and then looked it up to see who did it, I was like, oh, no. How am I supposed to pick just one from this? But especially I really love the black and white blouse that she was wearing. I don't know, at some point. But even her, like, her costumes where she, like, goes undercover and she has, like, the little sunglasses. And her this is the 40s, and so women are wearing a lot of tailored suits, which is not really my favorite look, but for some reason I think it actually works really well when she's like undercover and she's wearing the jacket with the lapels and the glasses. I don't know, man.
You're bringing up that whole supermarket, the undercover scene.
Yeah, the supermarket one, yeah.
Oh, that supermarket set, man, didn't even look real.
Oh, my God, no, it did not at all.
It looked like a TV set. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I don't know if that was done on purpose to boss, because they were wearing the sunglasses and everything else like that. They were trying to make them look childish. I don't know. Was that the intent?
To make them look small?
No, I mean, not like, I don't know, to make it look ridiculous, you know, to make them look like they're, you know. Because all the aisles were even short, you know, like they could look over the aisles and see each other.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. I liked it. I wasn't really going in any point in the movie for realism necessarily.
It was very ridiculous. I recall feeling that, like, while it was happening, like, this is a level of, like, they feel like they're committing subterfuge and they just look like two doofuses in the fucking market, like... Yeah, we know you guys are talking, like, we can see you across this room. Like, it's fine. It's a market. You talk to people. Who cares? Dotson! We've got Dotson here!
I think it also goes to show you how unserious they are and how they're not criminals, and they're not going to get away with it.
Nobody cares.
Foreshadowing, yeah.
I also love when Fred McMurray's doing his fucking voiceover, which is a brilliant way to excuse to have narration, but I love how he's like, I was so careful, like while he's like flicking his cigarette down and like smashing it with his shoe, like he's leaving evidence at the scenes of crimes and places, but he's like so careful, like, does everyone smoke that much? Like, come on, dude. Like,
yes, they did, and I thought it was really funny. I thought it was just like little funny moments. I don't know that this was supposed to be especially serious. Well, especially because it's also kind of based on a true story, and the people that it's based on are also wildly incompetent. So I kind of thought it was a nod to that also.
I mean, there's some funny moments in it, but I don't know. I guess it's supposed to be like a serious drama. You know, it does have some black humor in it, but...
I thought it was kind of tongue-in-cheek. I mean, again, starting from their romance, which wasn't a romance.
Yeah,
I didn't take them... I just didn't think they were serious. It was two people trying to like play each other, and they're both bad at what they do. And I don't know. I thought it was kind of funny. I wouldn't call it a comedy, but I thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah, no, it's got its moments. I don't know. I was just not into it. I'm sorry.
Especially because everyone's also so, the acting's a bit over the top. I don't know that, especially the two female leads, the mother and the daughter, they're so over the top, and I'm sure they were directed that way. But again, I just kind of didn't take it that serious because they were just being so melodramatic.
Yeah, it felt like everybody was trying to play everybody else except for Keyes. He's just trying to figure shit out. but it, like, the lack of seriousness with which the two actors or the characters seem to be giving to their quote unquote relationship, when he's calling her baby every time and she's saying I love you like 3 days into their fucking relationship, the tone was hard for me to grasp. Of like, clearly the movie seems to think that we should care about their relationships, but the characters themselves don't seem to actually give a shit. So like, am I supposed to care? And I felt that kind of tension the whole time. And if that's what they were going for, then fucking nailed it, Billy Wilder. But it felt like it was trying to be like a bit more of like a rom-com heist thriller kind of thing that like has a twist at the end. Maybe that's just me interpreting what Brian was saying of like, I've seen this movie so many times that it wasn't surprising at all.
Yeah, I didn't think it was surprising at all. Still kind of enjoyed it. I agree with you. It was slow in certain parts, and yes, it's been ripped off a million times, but I never once took any of them seriously.
Do you think the movie wants you to take them seriously, though?
No, I honestly, I don't know that it does, because... Yeah, I just don't... There's nothing... At no point was anyone ever... The only serious character is the boss who's trying to figure... Mm. But he's not that serious either, because you're just like, oh, he's an asshole who doesn't want to pay out his insurance policy. I didn't really take anybody seriously.
See, it's hard to... I don't know. It's hard to say that it's not supposed to be drama, because there's scenes where they're milking so much suspense, you know?
Oh, yeah, for
you know?
Sure.
Like when the car's not starting, like there's no... That's not played for a laugh. That's supposed to be like, oh, shit, these guys are going to get caught.
Well, that just because this is why I wouldn't call it a comedy, is just because no one is really a serious character. They're all trying to cheat everybody else. Doesn't mean there's not suspense. There is still suspense. Do you want to see these clowns get caught? I mean, maybe you do, but not really. Usually you're kind of rooting for somebody, right?
I mean, you can have I think there's black comedy elements for sure, but like, yeah, I would leave it like there. I mean, yeah, because I mean, I don't know, just the way they play everything, like even the end scene, there's not like a punchline or like the movie just ends.
When it circles back to the beginning.
Oh, but they had that cut scene at the end, right? Wasn't there a scene they cut at the end?
Are you talking about the one that they didn't film, I think? Talking about, or the main character, what's his name? Fred McMurray is supposed to go to the gas chamber or get killed for the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently they just decided that lighting his pipe or whatever was enough.
I liked that because I just assumed he was going to die there on the floor.
Right.
I thought it was a great way to end it, and it's fitting for the time, I think.
Well, also, like, he spends the entire movie, like, lighting matches for keys, and so for the end of the movie to be keys lighting the match for him, like, that's supposed to be some level of, like, see, his time is going up in smoke or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is a nice motif, I will say. Like, I do enjoy those kinds of things. But that is also, to Brian's point, something that we've kind of seen that stuff so many times now. But was this the first time that kind of imagery was used? Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm going to go on a limb and say no, probably not. But, you know.
Does it feel heavy-handed to you, Brian?
I don't know. It's hard, man. Like, cause like, it's not the movie's fault. Like, you know, it's my fault, right? Like, I saw all this other stuff like later after this movie came out. Like, you know, it's not fair to the movie. I feel like a douchebag, but also at the same time, it's just like, why does this one not hold up, or like the Maltese Falcon did?
Yeah,
like
it really did. Yeah,
honestly, well, okay. I mean, I agree with you to an extent, and I will add that, I don't know, but I kind of felt that in the very first scene, well, the scene where he goes to her house and she's in the towel and the anklet, I enjoyed that a lot, but I was also kind of like, oh, this isn't as good as I was expecting. Like, it doesn't just draw me in and hook me, and I, at that point was when I decided I'm not going to really care about these characters.
Yeah, I had a kind of similar experience with that scene, because I was like, I feel like the movie wants me to care about what's happening, but I just, I'm not, in, I like, I was in for the concept of what they were like trying to do, but like it seemed really obvious that they were playing each other or acting, or you know what I'm saying? And so that's where to me the tone, I was like, I'm not sure what this movie wants me to think about this right now, which can sometimes be a problem.
I kind of didn't mind that because, I mean, as we've learned from most film noir movies, everyone is playing each other and is lying to each other. And it also kind of gave me, like, the same vibes as, like, what's that movie? How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Oh, and yeah, okay, yeah.
Where, yeah, with, like, Kate Hudson Matthew McConaughey.
Kate Hudson.
Yeah.
But where they're both... they're both trying to play each other, and neither one of them is taking. That's what I thought was going on here, and so yeah, it's not. I was actually the most surprised at the very end when she's like, "Oh, after I tried to kill you, that's when I realized I was in love with you." I was like, "What?" That's the part that seemed like the most out of the blue to me, because I just thought that they were both setting each other up for the fall.
Yeah, yeah, I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop the whole time, for sure.
I think some of Fred McMurray's, like, some of his motivations and, like, the whole rushed romance. I think the movie is trying to play the lines of, like, audience, what do you think? Is he in it for the woman? Mm. Is he in it for the money? Or is he just in it for the thrill of getting away with a perfect crime that he's thought about for these however many years he's been working in insurance?
Yeah, I mean, all of the above, right? Because I did not think that he was, like, a great moral character, which is why what makes him great for this role is because he just kind of seems like a sleazebag. And so, again, you don't care about him. You know he's not really into her. He's like one of the guys where if any woman expresses interest, right? Yeah, if any woman expresses interest, the guy is suddenly madly in love. Like, no, you're not. You know, and so that's
Kristen, I'm right here.
And so that's what's going on here. And so I don't think he has like any sort of like upstanding characteristics. And so especially at the end where he's like, this is all your fault, you made me do this, I'm like, oh my god, like, can you just like take
responsibility? There was never murder until I was in the picture, right?
For anything.
My dude, you planned this whole fucking thing. And she said sure.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, it was like your idea, man. It was your idea. But yeah, and also the part with like the boss, where the boss has that conversation where he's like, yo, I think you can like be promoted. And he's like, no, thank you. I would prefer to be on the road. Like, no responsibility for me. Like, he's just not a good character. I don't think any of these people are good characters. I don't think they have any good motives. There's no real romance here. It's just fun. Let's see who's going to screw the other person over first. That's kind of what was going on here.
Yeah, it just takes forever for, like, the shoe to drop for Barbara Stanwyck's character to, like, have any kind of, like, reveal, or for, like, Fred McMurray to suspect that she's screwing him over. Like, it takes forever for the fucking stepdaughter's boyfriend to get involved and to be brought up into the subplot. And it's like, at that point, I don't even think there's 20 minutes of the fucking movie left.
Yeah, that's when it finally picked back up again. Yeah.
Yeah, the last 20 minutes... I would have liked to have seen them like playing off each other a little bit more. And I guess that's like, you know, like Basic Instinct. I would have liked to have seen that. I think that's fun. And we just don't get enough of that. Mm. It's really just the one scene at the end when he goes in and confronts her. And then outside of that, they're really kind of on the same page, and they're just planning and hatching a plan together.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the writing could be better, because I think you're supposed to care more about these people than you do. Because I agree, when the daughter's boyfriend got brought up, I was like, wait, what? did I miss part of the movie?
Who the fuck is that guy?
No, really though.
Is that why he was like immediately weird? Like, we were supposed to care about him being immediately weird when she gets dropped off by Fred McMurray?
Oh yeah, he was. Okay, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I think that's what the implication was. Well, you gotta be a tough guy. You don't have to say everything like a tough guy. I didn't care much for the stepdaughter either.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if she was supposed to be stupid or like so brilliant that she was playing everyone.
Right, exactly. But that's the theme of the whole movie, is who can you trust, right?
Sure.
And so, in that regards, I I agree with you. I couldn't figure out her motive, but I don't know. So would this, do you think, be the writing or the acting or the directing? I'm not sure exactly what the issue is here.
I don't know either. I've been thinking about this for a while. I just don't know.
Because originally I was blaming the acting, but now that we're talking about it, it could be it's probably Billy Wilder, and it pains me to say this.
But is it his writing or his directing?
Well, I just looked it up, and there's a co-writer, so maybe we can blame that guy.
It's the only time they ever worked together. Obviously, it was him. We've seen the apartment at Sunset Boulevard. They are great. This one, questionable.
It's questionable. And I hate to say that, because it is actually, I do think it's a good movie and worth watching if you haven't already seen everything that's kind of knocked it off, but... That clearly tells
that's
you it's
tough
worth
to say
something,
for something
right?
That's 80 years old. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what? Let's watch the trailer. Let's center ourselves. Let's look at some of these images and maybe we'll come up with an idea here. We're going to take a break. We're going to watch a trailer for Billy Wilder's Double Indemnity. We'll be back.
I killed Dietrichson. Me, Walter Neff, insurance agent, 35 years old, unmarried, no visible scars. Until a while ago, that is. Yeah, I killed him. I killed him for money and for a woman. It all began last May. I was thinking about that dame upstairs and the way she had looked at me. And I wanted to see her again, close, without that silly staircase between us. How could I have known that murder can sometimes smell like honeysuckle?
I can't stand it anymore. What if they do hang me?
They're not going to hang you, baby.
It's better than going on this way.
They're not going to hang you. Because you're going to do it and I'm going to help you.
Yes, from the moment they met, it was murder. Always behind them with his devilish hunches and his brilliant brain was Keyes.
The murder's never perfect. Always comes apart sooner or later. And where two people are concerned, it's usually sooner.
Could they get away from him and his relentless pursuit? And could they get away with murder?
You don't know Keyes. Once he gets his teeth into something, he never lets go. He'll investigate you. He'll have you shot at. He'll watch you every minute from now on. You afraid, baby?
Yes, I'm afraid. But not of Keyes. I'm afraid of us.
I'd like to move in on her right now, tonight. If it wasn't for Norton and his striped pants ideas about company policy, I'd have the cops after her so quick it'd make her head spin. Now, we know the Dietrichson dame is in it and somebody else.
Only you haven't got a single thing to go on, Keyes.
He'll show. He's got to show. Sometime, somewhere, they've got to meet.
All right, we're back. That was the trailer for Billy Wilder's Double Indemnity.
See, they're also ridiculous. How can you, like, look at this and think that it's not a little kind of, it's kind of funny, you know?
Well, the music tells us that it's not funny, because if there's anything that you can go off of in the movies in the 40s and the 50s is that the music will tell you exactly what you're supposed to feel, and it's definitely supposed to be intense.
I was watching that trailer. I was like, you know, this trailer makes me want to watch Body Heat, not
yes.
this movie.
Yes. Yeah.
That was like what this movie like should have been, like the back and forth between, you know, the femme fatale and the guy. That's what it should have been. The husband in between. Like, I wanted to see it play off kind of like in this movie. They needed more of those scenes. That's
they
why.
Couldn't, because it was the 40s and they couldn't be sexy.
They worked with what they had, okay?
Well, that I think that's why this one seems so, it's so boring. It's like, here we go. This is why. Because like all the good stuff that we love about all these movies is not present in this one. Or if it is, it's in two
scenes.
That's
really interesting to think about. Yeah, yeah. So do you think film noir as a genre works better when they're not trying to make it like this like sexy hot thriller kind of situation?
Oh, I don't know.
Because we did erotic thrillers and this is not one.
It could have been.
It could have been. I'll give you that. It could have been.
I think film noir can work as a sexy, erotic thriller, just not without the sex and, eroticism. But the thing is that you know that, okay, like with Body Heat and with erotic thrillers that we did, there was passion, and I don't think I ever once questioned that anyone in those movies had genuine... I don't know about love, but, you know, like genuine feelings for each other.
Sure. Yeah. There was chemistry.
in film noir, there is not necessarily feelings. It's more of this will work for right now.
Interesting.
And so I think it's slightly different. And they had to be that way because of the Hays Code at the time. But so I don't necessarily think that it's just different. It's not worse.
No, it's just interesting to compare it because this movie feels like it could be like an erotic thriller that would have been like kind of hot because like they seem like they should have chemistry together, but like it is a little bit cold. And then the one time when it looks like they kind of spend the night together, it's barely implied.
But I think that has more to do with the fact that the acting in this is not really that great.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So do you think like if maybe these two people or these two characters had been portrayed by actors that had a little more chemistry, that we would have felt it a little bit more?
Yes. Interesting. I think so. Yeah. Because, I mean, even with the Maltese Falcon, where I knew they didn't love each other, I still kind of cared a little bit more about their relationship. This one, it seemed like both people were using, both leads were using the other just because of convenience. Oh, you showed up at my door at the right time. Perfect. Right. You will do. And I did not feel at any point that they were even really attracted to each other beyond very basic levels. And I don't think you can blame that on the Hays Code because I think you can have movies with attraction. And
oh no, yeah, I mean, look at all of fucking Hitchcock's stuff. Like there's so much like sexual tension from the chemistry between those characters. Like I think you're right. That's what was missing for me was in the Maltese Falcon. I felt the tension that I was excited for in that movie was, they're obviously not in love with each other. I wonder if they're actually going to fall for each other. I wonder if they're actually going to, like, in the process of this, like, maybe get, you know, oh, I didn't realize I caught feelings along the way kind of thing. In this, it was just, like, fucking cold the entire time. So when she has that whole line of, like, I never loved you until a minute ago when I couldn't shoot you a second time. Like, that's not even, like, romantic. Like, you're just like, oh, I realized that I didn't want you to perish. Like, cool.
Yeah, I didn't think it was romantic at all. I was like, girl, you're losing your edge. What are you doing?
You've been cold your whole life. Like, why are you fucking, like, supposedly falling now? Like, I'm not even feeling that. But that didn't feel believable.
Yeah, because if anything, that would be a great line if you're going to, like, let him get closer and then shoot him. You know, like, come on.
Yeah, right? That's what I was expecting. That's what I was waiting for. Like, let him get, like, lean in for a kiss and then bam, like, she fucking, like, just maybe, cold-blooded. Yes.
Maybe her eyesight is off and she needs him to get closer. I don't know. Like, there, you know, and she just suddenly goes soft and I just hated it. I hated that part. I didn't really enjoy Barbara Stanwyck in this, and I think she has moments, but I think she's miscast.
I wanted to. I thought she was really attractive, and the fucking wig was awful. Like, her blonde wig got real, real rough in a few scenes, but like, who seemed like they should have been the more hinge person in this? Like, Barbara Stanwyck and find a better, like, leading man, or... fuck, what's his name? It was literally in my brain a second ago. Fred McMurray. Yeah, like, should he have been the guy? And the...
Of the two, I thought he was better. Of the two, I would replace her. But honestly, yeah, if you found a different guy, then maybe she would play off of him better.
Again, I think these performances have been ripped off so much. These, like, feel like... fucking these feel like the spoof performances now when you watch it. They're all so over the top.
Interesting. Yeah,
even Edward G. Robinson, he's like, wow, yeah, see, let me tell you what, murder can never be solved this way, blah 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 blah. He's just like speaking a mile a minute and he's so fast, and
which can work. I mean, in the Maltese Falcon, they're speaking a mile a minute. It can work. That's not the issue here. I don't think that's the issue. Like, we can sit here and pick a lot of these things apart.
Sure, yeah.
But when you compare them to other movies of the time, I don't know that that's the issue.
But it's just all of it together, man. It's just all of it. It's all of it together. Mm. It's just all... It feels like it's all been so ripped off.
It's overstimulated or just it's over ripped off?
It's just... It's too much stuff has been taken from this that, like, watching it today... I don't know. You're watching the cannibalized corpse of Billy Wilder's fucking masterpiece, dude. It's literally the skeletons. Everybody's picked all the flesh off this fucking thing. You know, we don't even have bones now. We just got dust.
The reason I'm inclined to think that there's an issue with the movie and not that, even though I agree with you to an extent, is because this was nominated for, what, 7 Oscars? And it didn't win any of them. I mean, there was an issue back then also.
Well, okay. The movie that won the Academy Award that year was that Bing Crosby movie, Going My Way. Okay. Gaslight was also up for Best Picture. And another film noir, Laura, the director, Otto Preminger, was up for Best Director. And none of these people won. So... you know, and who even remembers Going My Way? Have you guys even heard of that fucking movie?
Nope.
Yeah, exactly. But I guarantee we've all heard of Gaslight and Double Indemnity, right?
Well, I think what's interesting about watching a movie that's this old that has been ripped off so much is there are other movies that we've seen that were the originator of the ideas that other people copied, but the original idea stands for what it is. And it's really interesting to note that this seems more like these are great ideas. And a lot of them are really interesting concepts, but whatever this was supposed to be, it didn't quite congeal the way that we wanted it to. And that's why we feel like the ripped off stuff is the better version, because they took the, oh, that's a great concept. Let me actually refine it. Let me actually craft it so it becomes something that's more tangible and more real. And this just felt like a parody of itself because it wasn't a fully realized idea. It was the beginning of it, maybe.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there's an issue here, and it's not just because it's the original, and it's not just, yeah, I think there is an issue with the original film itself. Is this one of Billy Wilder's first works? Maybe he just had like a
that's toward the beginning.
No?
Yeah, this, but you know, I enjoyed The Killing more than I enjoyed rewatching this. Like even The Killing like had some... Like, you know, that's another movie I hadn't seen like 10 or 15 years. And that had some surprises and some things I'd forgotten about. And it's just like when they happened, I was like, oh, damn. All right. Okay. Ooh. Yes, you got me there, movie. But this was just so paint by numbers. And then I don't want to knock the movie because other movies have ripped it off. Like Body Heat probably did do the femme fatale story. It probably did do that better. It's definitely more entertaining. But... when you have 20, 30 years to watch this movie and think about how this movie could be better,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of not fair. So I feel bad for ripping this movie up a little bit and even calling it.
Well,
boring.
That's what I'm saying. Like, but that's the point of what I was trying to say. Some things are like almost a fully realized like masterpiece, but they're not quite there. They're just like the beginnings of an idea. Like some things get ripped off a million times. I think this is Billy Wilder's 4th movie that he directed. The Apartment was in 1960. That's like almost fucking 20 years later. You know what I'm saying? Like that's he has a long time to develop his skills to realize this works. I need to fix that better. But you see a lot of his early like skill. Like this is still a really solid movie and it has a lot of really good things in it. And it's interesting to see how far he can go as an artist. You know, working his craft of writing and directing and create, you know, puts out better things like The Apartment.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's not quite fleshed out and you can see that, yes, this can become something brilliant. Billy Wilder is going to become a brilliant writer, director. And so I don't know then, because I still think the acting's not great. And so then does that, is his lack of experience the reason like he could not direct them, or did he just miscast them?
Yeah, maybe the casting was like studio decisions. Like he got one of them, but he, you know, wasn't able to decide on the other one, or someone else made those calls and he didn't realize how much that would affect things. Like those are the kinds of things that like you really only learn from experience, or like at best maybe someone else has given you anecdotal evidence and you try to do that. But like, I've heard a lot of directors, especially writer directors, talking over the years about like, I wish I had known this from my first movie or from my 6th movie on my 2nd movie, you know? So like that seems very reasonable for someone who did 27 directorial movies. Like he's got a long list on IMDb.
Well, Well, I think that's the other thing, too, is we are comparing this to his later work, and we are comparing this to movies that were inspired by this that were also brilliant. And so I think if this had just come out and at the time, I can see why people would, I can see why this is popular and this is brilliant, a brilliant film at, of its time. I do think it still kind of drags it, like, towards the end.
Masterminds, it is not.
No, I was bored to tears after the second time he went to Barbara Stanwyck's house. And they have that whole speed limit conversation and everything. And then once he's gone, like, they all their interactions are never as good as that one time.
Wait, the speed limit interaction was the good time, or that?
Yeah,
was...
that was the last great one. Yeah, I don't know if that was the first or second, but
I'm not going to disagree with you, but I will say there was one moment that I really loved, which was when her husband is being murdered and they can't show it, and so they just focus on her face the whole time.
She's staring forward.
I loved it
for like 45 seconds straight.
I thought it was great.
Yeah, I was like, damn, this woman is cold blooded. Cool. She doesn't turn. She doesn't wince. She doesn't even fucking acknowledge. She's just like, yep.
You can kind of see her face is kind of going through something, but yeah, she never like slips. She never, it's more like this thing is happening and I'm just not going to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Even though it's right next to me. And I thought it was actually really brilliant.
Brian's wheels are turning.
No.
He hates it also. He hates that part.
No. I don't hate anything in the movie. No, I do not. I do not hate a single thing. I love a lot of the shots. Yeah, it's a gorgeous movie.
Oh, it's a beautiful movie. I like all the fucking like hard lines of blinds on every fucking wall where there's like no reason to have blinds behind them. Like there's one shot where there's like blinds on one side and blinds on the other, and there it's just like this like 100mm lens where it's completely compressed frame and it's just blinds on the wall behind him. And it's like, there's no point for this, but I fucking love it. Like, it looks so cool.
Some of it is a little dark to where you have a hard time. Some moments seeing what the fuck is even happening, but
yeah, I think I watched a DVD of it, but there were a lot of like moments where it goes to a really dark moment and you just see like fucking grain shit go on over the whole transfer.
Yeah,
like I don't know if that's just a low quality transfer or that's the way like the film stock was in the first place, but
I don't know.
Like, you really see it when he's going in the beginning of the movie when he's like going into the entrance place. Like, that's kind of the first time I notice it, but yeah, it recurs a lot. Like, so I don't know if it's just we had to have 200T film stock and you know everything is like really low levels or whatever, but overall I really like the tone of the cinematography.
Did anybody watch the 4K? I know this has a 4K Criterion. I didn't get to watch it.
No,
I don't think so. I watched it. Okay, so I watched it on the Internet Archive, and I discovered that there's two different versions
on the Internet Archive.
Yeah, the remastered one is the one that is not good. It's
interesting.
Yeah, it's actually not. If you watch the one that's the original, it looks amazing. And all of the colors accurate. Like, the blacks are black. Like, it's not in the extreme grayscale that the remastered one is.
Maybe they got the titles wrong.
I think they did. Because that happened. What? The other movie that I was like, oh, this is on.
The Killing?
Was it The Killing?
No, it was Maltese Falcon.
It was Maltese Falcon. It was the same one. I sent the link to the remastered one, and it was like the worst quality. compared to the other one, it just says the one that you're looking for is called The Original.
Wow.
The quality's really good.
Does anybody got anything else? I don't have anything else. Are we at ratings? We at ratings already?
If Jared was here, we would have nerded out a little bit more about shadows and contrasts and lights and shit. But yeah, no, it was a pretty movie.
I mean, if you want to talk about it, you can, because I thought it was really nicely done, but I don't have all of the vocabulary to discuss.
Well, I did enjoy how much they have just shadows on walls for like no reason in a lot of shots. It was weird to see that in like some of the interiors, especially the bigger, larger ones, like inside the insurance building, like there's like a spotlight basically as like Fred McMurray is walking along the corridor, like the railing. You know what I'm talking about? Like when he first enters the building in the beginning of the movie, his shadow behind him on the wall as he walks along the whole thing, when there's clearly like lights above him. So I thought that was an interesting decision to not just like have those lights on and have it feel like dark because of those lights, but like to literally just, let's just point a light up there and what, you know, whatever. But those are just things that I think kind of go out of style as movies move on. Like cinematographers and gaffers are like, yeah, we can do that more interestingly. But all the stuff that was like in offices and things like that, like there's always light coming through a window. There's always like motivated light. I love how much they're using shadow. Like there's close-ups and like eyes will be in the light, but like the foreheads will be in shadow and shit like that. Like it's a really interesting like visual movie to just sit and look back and, you know, sit back and look at.
Yeah, I know it's not natural, but I thought a lot of the lighting looked because it was so dark, but you just have like that one light source.
Yeah,
it looked really neat. And it was really in scenes, in parts it was really dark and you couldn't always see everything, but I thought that was kind of neat that like there's the scene when she's bringing the gun and putting it under the couch and all you can really see is like a glimmer when the gun hits the light. I thought that was amazing. Yeah. You don't need to see her like here's the gun. Let me put it, like you just see a flash and you're like, oh.
That's possibly a difference on the transfer because I watched it. It might have been a Blu-ray. But that was one of the scenes also that like there's just like a lot of grain and noise. And some of those like darks were actually pretty medium gray bright. And you could see the whole gun in the one that I saw. Yeah. Like it's subtle. It's like she's very clearly like trying to hide it and be kind of subtle with it. But like, you could definitely see it. But yeah, like that's a great scene to think about. Cause like, I love how when you're in that living room, you've seen that set before but like, it's mostly lit by the lights that are coming down the stairway, like in the hallway. And she's kind of mostly in silhouette in that scene. And they do a lot of that kind of thing throughout this movie where like, let's give an excuse to have silhouettes. Let's give an excuse to be backlit. And I found that like really pleasing as just like a general way to shoot a movie, but also interesting to contrast with, again, the shots where things are very front lit and very like, it's like, did you just have a different gaffer that day? Like, did the DP decide that maybe this is just the way we shoot this part. Like it's interesting to see maybe who was making those creative decisions. I would love to hear more about that.
I did like the eye lights they had. Every time they had a close up, they would have just big old triangle of light across the actor's face.
Fucking love it.
I thought that was great and very reminiscent. Obviously, this is not the first, but from the Addams Family.
Yes, yes. No, this is the kind of movies that was like imitating, and what's what I loved about that second Addams Family movie. Let's bring back some of those old techniques where you're just lights right on people's face.
I thought it was much more subtle in this than in the Addams Family, and it worked so much better here. I liked it so much better here. In the Addams Family, it always seemed kind of strange, which works for the Addams Family, but
the Addams Family is literally a joke that goes throughout the movie where they're just like, every close up with her is going to look like this, haha. You're like, it looks ridiculous, but I totally see what you're doing. But this is a very, like, subtle is a good word for it. It feels very natural, like it's almost expected. But the way that they build shadows into this world and the contrast overall, when you cut into a close up and there's barely part of a face in light, like it makes sense for the way that they're building that. I think overall this movie is really visually strong, which is part of what was striking me as difficult to understand why the tone and like the acting things just weren't working as well, because there's clearly some good visual ideas going into it. What do you think about the blocking overall, Brian? Like, were there any scenes that you're like, what are they doing here? Like, I'm confused.
I thought it was okay. I didn't see anything that was really wowzers great, really. Did anything stand out to you guys?
The blocking?
Yeah.
I would love to have seen like a starts in a wide and then like stays in a oneer for a minute and a half and they end up in like a close up, like that classic Spielberg thing. Like, I wanted to see something like that in this film, but it never like quite went there.
Yeah.
Some of the takes felt long enough like they should have, but it didn't.
I think it's at the end, at the very end. I do love that shot. Is it a dolly? I think it's a dolly. It's Barbara Stanwyck and she's sitting down. She's already put the gun under the the cushion, and Fred McMurray like walks behind her to the window where the blinds are, and he's like just looking at her as he walks over behind her. It's just a really cool shot. How she's sitting in that chair with that white blouse on and everything. It's nicely framed. It's probably my favorite shot in the movie, but yeah, in terms of blocking, like, I don't know. None of it was terrible. None of it, well, I didn't see a single thing that looked bad, but none of it was like wowzers or anything. You know, it all seemed very pretty standard.
I thought it was nice. The only blocking, and this isn't really blocking, but the only thing that really really stood out to me was when they murder the husband and then they move his body onto the train tracks, just because it's so absolutely ridiculous. But I still think it worked. I think the blocking was, I don't know. Yeah, maybe nothing really stands out, but the whole time that I was watching it, it seemed really nice. Like, it's not, I don't think it's, yeah, I guess I keep comparing this to the Maltese Falcon. Mm-mm. I don't think it's quite like that. It's not as good as that.
Yeah, that one was snappier overall. Like, you felt it, not just in the dialogue, but like in the way the movie flowed.
Yeah, with like characters being in the same set, like, you know, just talking, yeah, and like where they're going around the room, that felt so much more alive and just, yeah, like it was just constantly moving forward with the conversation and the characters. Like every time the conversation would pivot, the characters were pivoting around the room. And it's like, oh, this is really nice. And in this, it's like we're walking from the front door and we're sitting on the couch, and then one character gets around and walks around the couch, and then they just sit back down right where they were. And then they get up, and then they leave, and then that's the blocking. And it's like, yeah, it's functional.
Yeah, functional is a good word. It did look really nice. I mean, I think there's a lot of style that has gone into this film, but I don't know that anything about this really stands out. Functional is a good word for it. It's beautiful, but functional.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it feels like the production design and the blocking were functional. And the cinematographer's like, all right, I guess I can make something work with this.
He's like, hold my beer. I'm going to make this shit look great. I'm going to make it look great, baby. We're going to put shadows all over everything. We're going to turn this light off. We're not going to even have to see this shit. Can we do this for the for the grocery store set? No, we need all the lights for that one.
Yeah, oh, that's what I was gonna say, was the blocking at the grocery store was so absolutely ridiculous, but that they are also such ridiculous characters that, like, I'm like, yeah, they would actually act like that. They are not very smart. I could, like, if you, they're like, oh, I'm like in my disguise, I'm in the grocery store, like, I'm gonna be all smooth about it, except they're not. They're like completely ridiculous. I thought it worked, though, but it was, yeah, again, it's not really brilliant, but I think it works.
Well, yeah, that's those are the moments where I'm like, does the movie think that I am supposed to take this seriously? Like, I'm confused right now.
Okay, but so in the moment in the trailer, and this is maybe why I never took anybody seriously, is because the way he delivers the lines, he's like, I'm 35 years old. I've never had any visible scars. Until now. And he says it so ridiculously that I feel like that for me set the tone of like, okay,
you're this definitely not supposed to laugh at that line, Crystal.
No, that is supposed to be like the most serious.
If he was a better actor, yeah, I would not laugh. I would be like, oh no, what happened to him? But he's not. No one in this is a great actor. And so I'm like, no, it's funny. I laughed.
My favorite part about Fred McMurray is my first experience with him was in the fucking Shaggy Dog. So everything that I have seen after that has been through the lens of, you're not the Shaggy Dog.
Okay, so I did want to add that I saved this quote. Okay, so as we mentioned earlier, this movie is based on, or this was based on a true story. And apparently there was a short story that was written about the true crime, and that is what Billy Wilder adapted. And so there's a quote, though, from Billy Wilder with his co-writer, and it says, we had arguments because he didn't know cinema, but when it came to atmosphere, characterization, and dialogue, he was extraordinary. He didn't like me very much because I wanted to force him to discipline himself. He was a poet, a giant of this kind of literature. There are people with whom you work in joy and others with whom it is more difficult. This was the case with Chandler. And then when they talked with the writer, he said the work with Billy Wilder on Double Indemnity was atrocious and undoubtedly had shortened my life.
Yeah, they fucking hated each other.
So I think the writing is where we can land on this.
Yeah, yeah. When the two co-writers don't have any amount of chemistry, it's shocking that the characters themselves don't have any chemistry.
Right. They were like, let's just make this. Let's get this over with.
What's great is like Paramount apparently has like fucking notes that like Raymond Chandler like straight up like wrote the studios, like actual memorandums where he was like, look, I do not want to work with this guy. And would write down these fucking laundry lists, like reasons of like, here's why Billy Wilder's an asshole.
Oh, like what? Have you read them?
No, I haven't read them. I saw them.
I didn't know if it was like published in the book somewhere.
No, I'm sure it is. I don't have his biography.
I think I saw a trivia on IMDb that said something along the lines of like some of the things in that list was like, he shows up late. He's a constant womanizer. And Billy Wilder was like, yeah, this dude like is very sexually repressed. So I enjoyed telling him about my escapades, like that kind of working relationship.
Okay. Okay. Got it.
Billy Wilder was constantly drunk while they were writing. And yep. Raymond Chandler was currently in AA.
Oh, okay. That'll also do it. Gotcha.
Yeah. Oil and water there.
On a scale of 1 to good working relationships, that does not sound like a good working relationship.
Raymond, how many pages you got done? I'm sorry. I can't. Somebody do a... Where's Jared? I need a drunk German accent right now. Oh, has anybody got anything else? Or are we officially at ratings?
Let's rate this bitch.
All right. Who's going first? Who's rating Double Indemnity?
All right, I'll start. At first glance, whatever, when the movie first started, I was intrigued. I felt like I was excited for what the characters were supposed to be and where the movie was like promising me that it could go. It turned out that promise was based on 50 other movies that have ripped this movie off, and that's why I felt like I knew where it was going. I wanted to be more surprised in this movie than I was. I wanted to be more hooked in with the characters than I was. Don't think that's because we've seen this movie so many times. I think it's because, like we've said, there wasn't quite the chemistry that they could have had between the actors. I think some of maybe the direction was a little bit wooden. Maybe that was the style of the day. Maybe that was like the general vibe of how acting went. But something about this movie just doesn't stand the test of time to me. I enjoyed watching most of it. I'm glad to have seen something that has been knocked off so many times. It's good to see the original. Billy Wilder has not quite hit his stride yet, I think, with this movie. Like, this is 4 movies into his career of 27 director movies. I think he's got some good ideas. I think he maybe hasn't either found the confidence or the voice or some of the skill sets that he needs to execute what he does later in his career. And that is, you know, the movie's lesser for that in this sense. But overall, it was a really solid ride. Like, I liked the structure of where they were going with it. I liked what the movie wanted to be, but I don't think it ever quite went where I wanted it to be. So it's not a perfect 10. I think it's really, I'm going to give it an 8. It felt mostly entertaining, but like still kind of lacking in a few areas, but not because of craft, just because of direction, I think is where I'm going to land with it. Yeah, it's a solid 8. I'm glad we watched it.
All right. Greg's gave it an 8. Kristen, you go next, you go last.
I'll go next. I don't really want to blame any of the issues with this movie on the age, because I would not want someone to go, oh, this is what all movies of the time were like. I think there are some things that are outdated, but overall, I think this movie stands as an interesting movie, and it's where it is lacking. I don't think has to do with the age of the film. I think it has to do with because even though the acting is so overdone, we've seen acting that's this dramatic that works. And I think the fault of this movie can be the directing, can be the writing, can be the acting, maybe all three. And that doesn't mean that there's not good stuff here. There's this movie is so well done stylistically. I know we just kind of said it was like, this, especially the blocking was like functional, but it's still actually really beautiful. There's beautiful shots in this. The costumes are really great. You can see a lot of the choices here that make this a movie that we still talk about today. You can see a lot of the choices here that inspired so many other movies, and even whether that's like just a concept or the lighting or the costumes or anything, you can see where it comes from. You can see how much thought went into this, and I think visually it is executed very well. It's when they start talking that it's a little questionable. The rest of the movie is like very well done. I did enjoy it. It does drag in parts, but I did enjoy it. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I would give it a 7.
All right, 7. What is 8 and a 7? Guys, this pains me. Look, I was expecting to come in here and be like, guys, what a great movie, right? This is so good. So many. I was literally expecting to relive the Maltese Falcon. I was ready to have that same experience. I haven't seen this in 10, maybe 15 years. It's been a minute. I just didn't connect to this. And it's such a classic that it bothers me that I don't know 100% why I didn't enjoy it, outside of just going, it's boring, guys, it's really boring. But like, it's like, it hurts me, because this is a masterpiece. This is like a movie that has like laid down a blueprint to follow for other films. This is like a Psycho, you know, for the slasher genre. Maybe it's not the first one, but it's the biggest one that put everything else on the map. That obviously it's the one we all recognize is doing something great. And that's what this is. You know, this is a huge movie for film noir. It's a huge movie for Billy Wilder's career. It's just, of all the movies I have watched of Billy Wilder's movies, and especially in the last like 4 years, this is hands down the worst one.
Wow.
And I've seen about 15 of them here. Like, I mean, this was just not good. And it's so weird after watching The Maltese Falcon, which was so efficient and just so rolling through, and to think about that movie was 3 years before this movie. It's like, I don't understand why we hold this movie up in such high regard. I guess maybe it's the Barbara Stanwyck and the femme fatale, that her role, her looks, her costumes. I don't know. Is this the first time that's been put on screen in black and white? I really don't know. Okay, I can't answer that question. But it is, I mean, she has a striking image. That wig is bad, but it does look like evil bitch wig. Like, whenever I see somebody, like anybody with that hairstyle in cinemas, I'm just like, oh, evil bitch. She's like, she's either like going after your money or she's an evil stepmom. Run. You know, it's just, it's the bangs and everything. But, and it, there's like so much history here, but it is just, guys, like, I just want to tell you, if you're interested in this kind of story, go watch Body Heat. Go watch Basic Instinct. Go watch all these other movies. If you want black and white film noirs, go watch Maltese Falcon. These are such better movies. It hurts me. It hurts me to say this. I would give this like a 5 or a 6. But, you know, it is a classic, so, you know, if Jared's going to rate every Kubrick movie a 10, then I'm going to rate every Billy Wilder movie a 10. You know, and then
fuck off.
And then you guys can just know
Jared's not here right now.
That I really think this movie's a 6. It was really boring. It was bad. It was not good. I did not enjoy myself. Go watch other movies that ripped it off. They're better. Does somebody want to read Rotten Tomatoes
RottenTomatoes.com.
Since Jared Callen is not here?
A dark, tautly constructed adaptation of James M. Cain's novel, penned by Billy Wilder and Raymond Chandler, Double Indemnity continues to set the standard for the best in Hollywood film noir. Rotten Tomatoes brings Double Indemnity in at fresh with a 97% tomato meter and a 95% popcorn meter is apparently now the audience score.
Wow.
Again, I would like to know when these reviews were
written. Nostalgia is rose-colored glasses.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's like, you know, look, I get it. When people tell you something's a great movie, you're just like, okay, it's a great movie.
Are we talking about Citizen Kane right
we
now?
We just got to drink the popcorn. That is a good fucking movie. No, that is not this film. Get the fuck out of
here. I just wanted to get you started.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
God.
Brian is not a complete and total asshole. He does like movies that are good, ladies and gentlemen.
Don't worry. I am a snob, okay? Just, I fucked up right here.
This is a personal disappointment.
I just want everyone to know that you do have standards and you are not.
I want to be snobbish right now. I can't. So with that, you've been listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. If you would like to get in touch with our snobbery, you can do so by sending us an email to moviecrewpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Movie Crew Pod. Griggs, where can the audience follow you?
I'm on Instagram at Griggsy Media. That's G-R-I-G-G-S-Y Media.
Kristen, where can they follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Kristen Magdalene. That's Kristen with a K and an I.
You guys can find me on Twitter at Elkins Edits. And we're going to close out the show tonight with... I guess we're just going to be playing the main titles because I don't actually have the soundtrack. I don't even know if it's ever been released. So, yeah, we'll probably just rip the main titles, I think, from the movie.
Sounds great.
And this is from composer Mikos Rosa. Enjoy.